This is Johnny Bluestar. Welcome to Threshold, a global media event. Is the universe just a random dance of atoms? Or is it a manifestation of a supremely intelligent architect? Can its purpose, or our purpose here on Earth, be adequately assessed? Can we commune with it, know its intentions, cooperate with its direction? Here, we define Threshold as a gateway state of awareness, allowing mankind to cross into a place of real cognition. Threshold allows us to approach questions of higher reality through the door of experience rather than mere belief. Welcome to Threshold, where we tear away the veil from commercial media, bringing our audience and participants into another realm of reality and enhanced communication.
This is Johnny Bluestar. Our featured guest today is Patricia Welch, who is appearing on our special program called The Evolution of a Singer. Before introducing you to our guest in person, let us begin our program with a song we will well recognize as performed by Patricia Welch.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, o'er the ramparts we watched, were so gallantly streaming. And the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, gave proof through the night that our flag was still there.
This song not only rekindles a feeling of love for country in me, but also has a distinctly personal association. The fact is, I went to St. John's College in Annapolis, the third oldest college in America. This was the very same school as the author of the Star-Spangled Banner, Francis Scott Key, went to. It was said that Key sat, when engrossed in his studies, under this mammoth tree we call the Liberty Tree. In fact, I studied under the same tree. That was a wonderful performance, Patricia. Welcome to Threshold. How are you doing today?
I'm fine, thank you, Johnny. Thank you for having me.
I love the way you sang our national anthem, but it was not the first time you performed it. In fact, I think you performed it in many different places.
I have. I've sung for presidents, President Ford, President Clinton. I've sung it for the wonderful General Schwarzkopf. He is just such a great person, and
yes.
I miss him. You know, he passed recently, but he was just a great guy, and I love singing the national anthem, as well as many other patriotic songs like America the Beautiful and God Bless America and all these great patriotic songs that are what our country is all about.
I believe the lyrics and mood of this song precisely define the spiritual power behind our Founding Fathers' vision, particularly by some precious words from the original very last stanza. I'm going to read them. Oh, thus be it ever when free men shall stand between their loved home and the war's desolation, blessed with victory and peace, may the heaven-rescued land praise the power that hath made and preserved us a nation. Then conquer we must when our cause it is just, and this be our motto, in God is our trust. And the star-spangled banner in triumph shall wave o'er the land of the free and the home of the brave.
You know, going back to the national anthem, I feel that the lyrics and the mood of the song very precisely defines the spiritual power behind our founding fathers' vision. And I think that's one of the reasons that we did so well, is that we were aligned with something tremendously powerful, which is reflected, I think, in the Declaration and the Constitution. I think that real patriotism to America kind of begins with that alignment. And if we could keep that alignment, we would be in a safer, more perfect world.
Absolutely.
I think that there, besides the actual text of these things or the songs of these things, I think there's something that was in the heart of our founding fathers like Washington and Madison and Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, Thomas Paine, all these people, that was just absolutely almost miraculous, because they were breaking away from traditions of basically a monarchy and oligarchy of different sorts, and they actually formulated a way to actually bring us a sense of freedom and liberty that had never really been experienced before in history.
Absolutely, yeah.
When did you actually record that, the Star Spangled Banner?
Gosh, let's see. It's been a while. I think I've had that recording out for about 7 years, 7 or 8 years.
Where did you record it?
I actually recorded it in Las Vegas.
Ah.
In a studio in Las Vegas. And I love that rendition because it kind of has that little bit tag part. It's like it's the traditional national anthem, but that sort of has another piece added to it. And I don't know the words word for word, but I like the added part of that song. So it wasn't actually part of the national, it was kind of a combination of the national anthem. I don't know if the listeners had a chance to listen to that, but at the very, very beginning it was, or kind of in the middle of it, it segued into a different section.
This song kind of paraphrases one of the mottos associated with America. It says, "In God is our trust." We have simplified it to say, "In God we trust." How has this phrase, "In God we trust," affected your view of America and your own career?
Well, I think that "In God we trust" is kind of the foreground of our nation. I mean, it's our founding fathers and how they, I think that's what keeps us together. And I think also another line that you said that I think is so important in that song and so true for America is our land of the free and home of the brave. I mean, we are so lucky as a nation because we still have our freedom, and so many nations don't have that. And I can say that we have the bravest men and women out there fighting for us. Americans, it's a true core of our being in America, of having people that are just a melting pot. And I think I just strongly believe, I'm so proud to be an American, in spite of whatever problems there might be in the world. I think that we're very lucky to have the freedom and have the brave men and women that fight for us. Yeah. Yeah, and war is a horrible thing, but I mean, back to that thing about the brave men and women of, fighting and believing in our country and believing in our nation, that's so important. We always pray for peace, of course, we always do, and we hope that someday we can all be unified everywhere, but once again, I'm very proud to be an American, and I think this is the greatest country to live in. I love being in Southern California, too. It's a great place to live also. So
it really is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I know, because we both met there and I lived there for many years, but the way we met was quite unlikely. And given the spiritual direction of Threshold, that is, its contention that the universe is not just a random, unplanned toss of the dice, it would be interesting for you to relate how we met.
Well, you know, it is very interesting. I'll tell you, it's with the wide world web, the internet, I actually was working with a Russian composer, and I met him through the internet also. And his name is Edgar Ahrens. He is phenomenal. He writes very cinematic, very beautiful music, great for movies. And I was working with Edgar, and he said that he had a partner that was his lyricist, and that just turned out to be you. But the interesting thing about the story is that when I found out who the lyricist was and where the lyricist lived, I was floored. I was just amazed, because you lived in Palm Springs, and I lived just like 20 minutes away. It was just like, oh my gosh, a hop and a skip.
When I heard him say you were from Quinta, I did not get it. And I would not have believed that was from La Quinta. I was really shocked.
Small world.
Yeah.
You know, what I found out in life is that if you are on the right kind of track, things like that start to happen. It's like there's some kind of guidance.
It is. They call it the, you know, fate. And it is there. I believe in that. I believe in deja vu. I believe in fate. I believe in all those things, because I think we're all kind of in this universe meant to be for a certain reason to connect. And I'm glad I met you. I'm glad I met Edgar, because we're doing some wonderful things. So with music.
I think it's possible that Edgar's listening in from Moscow.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I was chatting with him a few minutes before the show.
Yes, now it's morning here. It's probably nighttime there for him, right?
Patricia, getting on to another subject here. You've had a lot of experience in your life trying to find out, like, how to move forward in a career that is kind of as dramatic as your songs. And I wonder if... And many times you've experienced a bit of confusion in that area. Is that true?
Well,
trying to know exactly how to strategically move forward in your career.
Yeah, I think everybody struggles with that, you know, making the right decision, being in the right place, trying to have a plan and so forth. But I don't think I had major struggles with that, because I've always... Good things have fallen into my path. For, you know, even though I was a mother, I was a housewife, and my family was very, very, you know, first for me. But some great things happened in my career, and I guess part of it was being talent part, and then I think the other part was being in the right place at the right time. And but I've always had a drive. And I've always had a love for music, great singers. You know, when I was a child, I listened to Gordon McRae and Shirley Jones. And, you know, Broadway was always something that I loved, you know, when I was a child growing up. And I guess things started from that. Basically, you know, when I was a child, I lived out in the country. And it was just an outlet for me. And I lived in the hills of West Virginia. In fact, I used to go walk up a hill and sit on a grassy hill and sing The Sound of Music.
Really?
Yes, yes, yes. So it's always been part of me, even though, as I said, I'm a housewife, I'm a mother, but I've had some great career breaks along the way for being kind of set back in the shadows a little bit, I should say. I wasn't never really, you know, like super driven or like, oh, I got to be here. I've got to go to New York. I've got to go to LA. Never really felt that. But when I did, good things seemed to happen whenever I happened to be there. So.
Wayne Dyer has a set of books, but one of the things that he did is he did a movie called The Shift. And it talks about moving from ambition to purpose. And I think that people who are on purpose, they don't feel this this kind of desperation. Mm-hmm. But you know something, in your CD, you have a song which does provide some kind of a picture of confusion. I think it is kind of a romantic song, but I think it has a meaning for those of us who are confused and don't exactly really need to do a kind of self-assessment. It's called "Do You Know Where You're Going To?"
Yes, and Diana Ross, you know, recorded that and from the theme from Mahogany. But it does; it has great lyrics, and I always think of that. You know, we have to have some kind of path, some kind of direction. You know, we can't just be. You know, we have to have some kind of direction. So yes, and I've always liked that song.
Well, we're going to play now. Do You Know?
Okay.
Patricia?
Yes.
Isn't that beautiful? I mean, now, tell us something about the CD collection that you have.
Okay. Well, the CD collection is called Music for Great Entertaining, and it's a 46-song, 3-CD set, and it's split into 3 CDs, and the first one is called Cocktails with Patricia, Dinner with Patricia, and Dessert with Patricia. And I actually came up with that idea because, you know, I've been to a lot of dinner parties, cocktail parties and dinner parties, and, you know, a lot of times they're playing music, but it doesn't have a kind of like the best flow. And so what I did was I came up with the best, in my opinion, you know, what I thought was the best, were the best hit songs spanning from the 1940s all the way into the 90s. But mostly, most of the stuff's like from the 70s and 80s, that great music, that great core music like Melissa Manchester and Dionne Warwick and Barbara Streisand. And this kind of music makes great background music. It's very easy listening, very soothing. And so that's kind of how I came up with the idea to do this. And it just makes a great hostess gift, too. You know, to have this 3-CD set that can play for the entire evening from cocktails all the way through dessert.
Well, you know, let's get to the sort of heart of what we're doing here. This show is called The Evolution of the Singer, and since our show, Threshold, is about personal transformation, even spiritual transformation, we'd like to hear more about your career, your philosophy, and your understanding of how things evolved from the very beginning. So apparently you were brought up in a fairly, would you call it a rural area?
Yes, very rural. I lived 3.5 miles from my high school, and it was way out in the country. The nearest house was about, maybe like 4 blocks away. So it wasn't like there was one house after another. It was very, very, very rural. And when I was growing up and I was in high school, they built a new high school that they consolidated three towns and to make it like one big high school. And for us, it was big. And they had a wonderful fine arts program, and they decided to do musicals every spring. And so I remember asking my mother, I was like 14 or 15 years old, and I said, Mom, I really want to be involved in the musicals. And she said, well, you can't because there's no activities bus, you know, that drives out to the country to drive you off, and I don't want you, you know, I begged her, I said, look, Mom, I'll walk home, because she said she couldn't pick me up, and I said, I'll walk home. And back then it was safe, and so I was involved in the, and it wasn't quite dark yet, but I walked 3.5 miles every single day for about 4 or 5 weeks during the rehearsals of, I was in Brigadoon and My Fair Lady and several of the musicals that we did in high school, and I would sing all the way home. It was just so much fun. It didn't seem like 3.5 miles at all. It was just, you know, just walked and sang, and before I knew it, I was back home. Stayed home, did my homework, and then started my next day routine, as kids do, you know.
You know, when I was in sixth grade, and this is sort of one of my stories, but I'll make it really simple, we were asked to write a short story. And I wrote a short story about alien abduction. This was a long time ago. And I was told to come into this room with the art teacher and the music teacher, and they told me they were going to make this story and with another story, they were going to combine them and make a musical. So wow. I actually was involved in creating a musical with a bunch of different people when I was in sixth grade, and it actually was performed. And that was sort of my first little victory in my life. And so I know what it's like to kind of want these things at a very young age and feel that you're moving in some direction, some kind of sense of guidance.
Yes, and I think also what gives all of us that drive and that ambition and that also that interest is that I think we all have natural God-given talents. You have that natural God-given talent to write. I have a natural God-given talent to sing. And I think when you have the talent, you know it. We all know what our gifts are. We all know what we've been gifted. And so if we take those gifts, no matter what it might be, if you take those gifts and you utilize them, then they develop into something. It's like a flower. It's like a bud. You know, you take this little seed and it blossoms into a beautiful flower. And I think that's what life is all about, taking the gifts, the God-given gifts that we have, and utilizing them to the fullest of our abilities and having that creativity. You know, certain people have a gift of hospitality. Other people have a gift of maybe cooking, and whatever your gift might be, I'd say, you know, take that gift and utilize it, and good things can happen, because that's kind of what molds our entire universe, our world, you know, to have, you know, if you look around, you can see that there's abundance of talent in every kind of realm, every kind of industry. There's an abundance of talent, and I believe that all comes from the God-given gift that we have.
Well, you know, we're going to take a break now, but the first sort of commercial is about It is a book that I wrote with Ray Boyle, and later on we'll listen to a clip of his book about his autobiography. This is a book based on his life. Mm-hmm. So we're going to have a commercial break, and we're going to play something about a book called Boots in Manhattan, and then followed by a little ad for my friend Sandra LaFlamme. So here we go.
Boots in Manhattan is a coming-of-age novel by Ray Boylan and Johnny Bluestar. It is about a young Tom Boots Raymond who grows up in New York in the 1940s, who was a member of a street gang.
My friends and I were about to start our own game of stickball when Rabbit Lacey, the head of the Rattlers, came up to us and tried to move in on our game. We were called dwarves, the youngest members of the stupid gang.
Hey, Kevin, I need you to get some gloves and some stuff I left at my place.
No, this is our game.
Hey, are you my good little dwarf or what?
You've been calling me a dwarf since I was six. We're not your personal slaves, pal.
Hey, what is this? A dwarf rebellion? All right, big guy, we ditched the dwarf thing. We make you guys regular rattlers.
No, it's too late.
He looked at Jay and me. We looked away. Rabbit was now angry, and he pushed Kevin hard with the palms of his hand. Kevin tried to ram him in the stomach, but he stepped aside, throwing Kevin into the curb where he fell to the ground, bleeding profusely at the knee. Still, he managed to get up.
My street.
Kevin shouted at Rabbit, pointing at him with an angry index finger.
Find out more by Googling Boots in Manhattan, a 1940s coming-of-age novel, part one of the novel series The Foot Soldier by Ray Boylan and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Boots in Manhattan, Ray Johnny Kindle. That's Boots in Manhattan, Ray Johnny Kindle.
Nowadays, if you are a serious business person, just getting assistance from someone with a license and a bit of experience may not be sufficient. In fact, your realtor actually needs to be knowledgeable enough to be one of your top advisors. Whether you are facilitating a giant merger or selling your company, there's a lot at stake besides your finances. There is the future value of your current investment, financial freedom, integrity, and overall reputation. If you need this kind of assistance, Sandra LaFlamme is a real estate expert with the experience, reputation, and knowledge qualified to assist you in all your key transactions. Sandra LaFlamme, real estate services with integrity and conscience. Contact her today at 888-366-8070. That's Sandra LaFlamme at 888-366-8070. Well, back with Threshold with Patricia Welch. You know, one of the things that one of the songs I really like a lot that's in your album is a song called Fly Me to the Moon, which I remember was in the beginning of the one of my favorite movies, Wall Street. Can you tell us something about that song?
Well,
the actual history of it?
Yes, actually, Fly Me to the Moon was written by Bart Howard, and actually he wrote it, and it was the original name was called In Other Words, and Kay Ballard was the, in 1954, was the first recording artist for that song. And it was called In Other Words. But Peggy Lee, back in 1960, actually convinced Bart Howard to change the name. So the name was changed from In Other Words to Fly Me to the Moon, and that's when Peggy Lee recorded it. And of course, you know, since then, so many artists of Frank Sinatra and just so many great, great singers have recorded that song. It's a very happy, sweet song, and happens to be my husband's daughter's favorite song. In fact, that's one of the reasons I put it on my CD, because she said, Patricia, will you record Fly Me to the Moon? And I said, absolutely. For you, Suzanne, I will do that.
Well, let's hear it. Let's hear Fly Me to the Moon.
Okay.
In other words,
Patricia?
Yes.
It sometimes takes a long time to get to the moon, doesn't it?
Yes.
Well, I know that when you were trying to get to the moon and you knew where you were going, you began to train yourself. You went to college and became a music major, but also you studied under a former Metropolitan opera star. Can you tell us about that experience?
Yes. Metropolitan opera star Frances Yin. She was what they call a spinto soprano, which is like a soprano that's kind of between a mezzo and a lyric, and they have this like wonderful spin to their voice. And she was just really a wonderful teacher, and I loved working with her. And actually, that's what kind of I've started out loving Broadway. Then I worked a little bit towards opera, but then I loved acting so much, and I just kind of went back to Broadway. And but I am classically trained, definitely classically trained. I don't know if people can hear that in my voice.
I think so. But I do think they can hear it.
Yeah.
If they listen to your songs, they'll know that this is something
right.
Kind of extraordinary in terms of
you.
What you bring to the pop
thank
arena.
Thank you.
Well, tell us about some other types of training that you actually did, because it wasn't just the opera.
Well, I grew up in West Virginia, and we talked about that earlier, about the rural area. And so my stepfather, he loved country music. And so, you know, you can imagine a young 14, 15-year-old vocalizing and working on classical pieces hour after hour, day after day. It kind of got on his nerves a little bit, and he would say, okay, enough of that. How about singing some real music? And so to make him happy, I would, you know, sing a Patsy Cline tune or, you know, something country. And then I actually, at Capital City Music Hall, I did mm-hmm. some backup there. And I started enjoying, I have a wide range, first of all, at four octaves. So I guess I have the capability to be able to do that. But it took a little while to transition into from that soprano. And on this Cocktail CD, you hear a lot more soprano. But like when I really do like the Faith Hill stuff and the Reba McEntire, it's get down country, no sopranos coming through at all. It's total, kind of like a heads and tails, you know. I got the head's voice and I got the tail, you know, different, you know, different sounds. So, and I like that. I like to be able to have different colors. And but it's important for me, most important for me is that in a song is the lyric. If I can't believe the song or feel the lyric, I can't sing the song. And luckily there's enough great songs out there that have great lyrics. And you by speaking of lyrics, have the most interesting, unusual lyrics that fit with Edgar's songs. Edgar Ahrens, the Russian composer we talked about earlier.
Thank you.
And it's really unique music. It's kind of a little bit out of the box. A little bit, I kind of call it maybe, like Enya is out of the box and totally different. And I think that's kind of where our music can go. Not in that category, but being as what I'm trying to say is the differentiality, the uniqueness of what you and Edgar and I have put together is so unique, and it's really different. It's not like anything out there. So, which I think could be a good thing.
I think so. You know, I want to get back to, you know, you had your formal training that we talked about, but I think there's another type of training that you had, and that is the training you had by actually doing it. And one of the earlier experiences, wouldn't you say, is when you worked with Yul Brynner when you returned to Broadway with The King and I.
Yes, I was a very young girl, you know, out of college, and decided to go to New York. And I went to New York with $1,400 in my pocket, which back then I thought that was a lot of money. Well, it didn't last more than a few weeks between cabs and food and hotels and so forth. And so, but they had it. Luckily, it was kind of a Cinderella story, because I was in New York. And I was ready to leave because of I was out of money, and I actually asked my mom to wire me a little bit, just kind of sustain just a little bit longer. And so I was walking out of the Western Union, and literally I bumped into a college a friend, somebody that I went to college with from West Virginia, and she lived in New York City. And we started talking, and I said, oh, my gosh. You know, it was just like she recognized me, I recognized her. And this is one of these fate things, right, that we talked about earlier.
Exactly,
And so I told her that I was getting ready to leave, and I just didn't think I could stay in New York anymore. I'm out of money, and I don't want to keep bleeding my mother, you know. So anyway, Marsha McIntosh, that's her name, she said, you know, let me talk to my sister. We live in a Upper West Side apartment, and we have a two-bedroom, but if she says you can sleep on the couch, we've got a closet and a couch. I said, I'll take it. You talk to your sister. And so I gave her a number. I was at the Y, back then they didn't have cell phones, or I didn't have a cell phone. And so I was at the YWCA, and I said, please call this number and let me know. And so she called that evening and said that I could stay. Long story short, the following week, they had the open call audition. I wasn't even an equity actress. It wasn't union or anything. They had an open call for The King and I. And wow. I got called back. And then I got called back again and again, you know, because there's several callbacks before you get to that point. And then they said Yul Brynner was in Japan and that he wanted to hear me. Well, there were like 10 women that he wanted to hear, that they narrowed it down to for the role of Tup Tim. Six were Asian, four of us were non-Asian. And I said, there's no way in the world I'm going to get this role. But for some reason, they picked me. I don't know why.
Was Yul Brynner there? He was there.
He was there for the final audition. And so I met him, and we all had to sing the one song that Tup Tim sings. She sings three songs in the show, two duets with Lunta, the man that she's in love with, and then she sings My Lord and Master, because she's a present. Tup Tim is a gift to the king. And so Yul Brynner was there, and he had every one of us, all 10 women, sing My Lord and Master. And when I sang it, he just came up to me on stage. I was the only one that came, and he said, take your shoes off and sing it again and just walk the stage while you sing it. And I did that. I still didn't think I was going to get the part. And then I got back to my friend's apartment that evening, but the next morning I got a call from Mitch Lee. Mitch Lee wrote Man of La Mancha, and also he was co-producer with Yul Brynner. So it was called the King Lee Company at the time. This was the final Broadway revival of The King and I, 1980 to 85. And Mitch Lee called me up and he said, we'd like to have you do the role of Tup Tim. We'd like for you to come in and sign a contract. Now, when I went to sign the contract, this is kind of all ties into that fate thing. Do you know what my starting salary was?
Yep.
It was $1,400 a week. That's exactly what I ended up going to New York with, was that $1,400. So I was like, oh my, that was $1,400 plus per diem, which was really nice back then, back in 1980. And that's what my salary was. So I was like, oh my gosh, this is all fate. So I took the role and Cinderella's story happened. And here I am many, many years later. But that was the beginning. I think that was the door opener for me, because I think when you have a great break like that in history, then only good things can happen after that. And I got my lucky break back in 1980 with Yul Brynner.
No, I was checking up on Yul Brynner's story. He also had, I'm sure, a lot of help, because his father left his family.
Yes.
And his mother took him with his sister to China. And then they went to Paris, and he played guitar in cafes and stuff. He came to USA, and he worked as a broadcaster for us, for the United States, and broadcast to occupied France, which he had lived in. He could speak fluent French. And then he started to study with Michael Chekhov. So he was kind of musical, too, you know, before even this happened to him. And so, you know, he was actually on the stage. Did you know this 4,625 times?
Yes, and I did 2,000 some performances with him.
Did you really?
Yes, I did.
What were the actual songs that that you were singing?
That I sang, or that Yul Brynner sang?
That you sang. I sang
We Kiss in a Shadow.
You're beautiful.
And
yeah.
I Have Dreamed.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, my big solo is My Lord and Master. And then I also narrated a 25-minute ballet in the show. It's a beautiful ballet maybe it's about 20 minutes, but it was a beautiful ballet called The Small House of Uncle Thomas. It was based on Uncle Tom's Cabin and slavery, and Tup-Tim wanted to get this message across to the king because she felt she was enslaved and trapped because she loved Lunta. Lunta was the emissary who brought her to the king, and she was already in love with him, but they had no chance because she was gifted to the king from her king, you know, from Burma. And so she had to, she had to kind of basically go with the flow, even though she was very unhappy. And Mrs. Anna in the show says, you know, Your Majesty, of what interest to you is Tup-Tim? She's just like, you know, one bowl of rice is like any other bowl of rice. And he says, ah, now you understand about women. Because he had like, 60 wives or whatever. I don't have.
Well, listen, Patricia, we're going to go to a break in a minute.
Okay.
I just want to say that it's really great to have you here.
Thank you.
We're going to have another exciting hour together in just a little while. We'll take a break for a few minutes.
Yes, and we can talk about our music, what you and Edgar and I did together.
Yes, that would be wonderful too. Thank you.
Thank you.
So we will be back at Threshold talking with Patricia Welch, who has just created her own CD, a three-part CD called Cocktails, Dinner, and Dessert with Patricia. And we will be back.
It is the 15th century. El Tesoro de Cielo, a Spanish treasure ship, sends a scouting expedition to a strange island. Golden statues surrounding them prove the enormity of their find. Suddenly, hordes of ghoulish creatures with scaly green flesh and skeletal wings descend upon them from the sky.
What do you think of this, Rufio?
These creatures are fragile, Captain. We can take them with our swords.
They seem supernatural. Who knows what powers they possess?
Fallen angels, weakened by their treason.
My God, are you saying they're Nephilim, the devil's host?
I'm saying whatever they are, we can take them. Do any of you cowards dare join me?
Up against sharp knife-like nails and hideous fangs, the men's swords rip into slimy green flesh. Though black blood pours copiously from their half-naked bodies, creatures miraculously persist. Can the crew survive this bloody, cursed battle?
Find out more by Googling The Thrice Born, a new sci-fi supernatural novel by Carlos Lopez Avery and Johnny Bluestar. Google with the words Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born. That's Carlos Johnny Kendall, The Thrice Born.
New Galaxy Enterprises is a media company specializing in wide-ranging content like novels, nonfiction books, screenplays, commercial advertising, web content, etc. One of our most esteemed providers is illustrator Robert W. Zalo. I work on all my most important projects, like book covers, logos, web design elements, with Robert. As an illustrator, he worked on the Ignatz-nominated comic book, The Expert's Guide to Killing Things That Go Bump in the Night. His skills encompass advertising, magazine illustrations, gaming, comic books, TV production, and scenic painting. His clients include Comcast, Adelphia, Haven Talent, Forceworks, High Octane Theater, Star Creative Advertising. If you wish to contact Robert, go to johnnybluestar.com and let me know. That's johnnybluestar.com. For artist illustrator Robert Zalo, an essential component of all the work we do. Maybe he can help you too. I've worked with Russian composer Edgar Aaron for quite a few years, building an inventory of songs, many of which feature singer-performer Patricia Welch. We will soon be releasing these songs, components of an album and a musical in progress called Hadley's Castle. When Edgar and I first got together, I was amazed by the brilliance of his musical scores created for movies, TVs, and animations. Here is a sample of the work he did on the Russian TV series, available now on Amazon, called The Secret Agent's Memoir, which had two seasons. This score is called Escape and was created for the first season.
I am very pleased to say that Bridge of Light Productions, a division of New Galaxy Enterprises, is proud to be the contact point for television and film companies seeking information about this amazing composer's work. If you're in the entertainment business and wish to know more, contact me at johnnybluestar@gmail.com. That's johnnybluestar@gmail.com.